Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming. I guess I'm the last person, so I'll be polite and step on Kevin and Tim's toes by thanking everybody, and they'll say it again, I'm sure. But thanks, Kevin and Tim, for organizing the session and the two-day conference. It's been really exciting for me, and I've learned a lot. Thanks to NUS colleagues and the audience, especially a lot of the audience who've been here for quite a few sessions. It's really been impressive. And I've learned a lot from you, too, so that's cool. And the Manchester folks, it's been great to meet you. And the only thing I knew about Manchester before yesterday were two things. One was soccer, which I don't care about, sorry. And the second is one of my favorite songs is by a band from Manchester, Cemetery Gates. So now I know more. And it's nice to know you. paper is called Bringing the Countryside to the City, Practices and Imaginations of the Rural in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. This is part B of a project that I introduced in the Asian Futures Conference here at NUS at RE last year. Some of you were in that audience, and I presented some of my interview data from last year about some of these longings for home, urban residents, in some cases people who were from Ho Chi Minh City, looking beyond the city to settle down, to find better health, to find safety for their children, and to find stronger kinship links. Today is part B, and I'll be talking more about the institutions, the practices, the everyday activities that make up the rural in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. And in so doing, I want to make the overarching argument that it is critical to think of the importance of the rural as a dimension of the urban experience in contemporary Vietnam. And it follows a lot from what Eric has said about what I think a lot of people feel is the importance of the rural in the urban, but also how people don't necessarily always want to become urban, but they want to bring the rural into the urban in order to make the city a more meaningful place. And so I'll talk more about that in a moment. This is a picture I took of a place called Quan Hai Lua, which means, colloquially it means two rice plants, but it's basically means southern Vietnamese food, and it's southern countryside food. And this is a new food stall that's been open for the last couple of years. It's very popular in the middle of Ho Chi Minh City at Ben Tan Market, for those people who know it, right next to the main bus terminal. In really the cultural heart of the city. So at night the market inside closes, and the outside this marketplace opens, and it features a lot of different foods from southern Vietnam, rural southern Vietnam. It has young women dressed in traditional clothing who are cooking over a fire in sort of the traditional way. You can see Hai Lua in the back. Food countryside, it says in English back there. You can read that. And they've got a number of different delicacies that both expats, tourists, and local Vietnamese seem to prefer and want to experiment with. Cua crab, apui, which is the snail, and then some other types of snails, and then these are clams. And you can see they're hard at work, and the performance is a big part of this, right? it's not just the food and the camaraderie around the restaurant. It's also the way in which the food is performed. And I want to stress that this is by no means a sole component to the city. This is becoming a trend as the city has grown, as the country of Vietnam has become urbanized since the reform era. This is now 25 years and counting. The cities have become urbanized in very modern ways, according to sort of the Western understanding of that conception. But there's been resistance from other parts of the city and residents who insist upon making the countryside in some ways, backbone of the urban experience. You can get a little better view there. And here's a picture of the menu. I had a little conversation with one of the owners because they thought I was going to take it, you know, this proprietary information. But I wasn't, because I don't even like this stuff. But, you know what I like. Let's go over the presentation. I want to introduce my main arguments and research questions, and again, following from some of the ideas about urban assemblage, I really want to play with the idea of the tension between the actual in the city and the possible, following from McFarland's 2011 paper. But also, I think it ties into a lot of this idea of potentiality and what is possible in the city. Now, the discourse or the imaginative component of my research is focused more on the possible. But the actual is going to be featured here more so. My conceptual framework is built upon urban assemblage. In contrast to actor networks theory, I think urban assemblage has a nice historicity to it and a nice provisionality to it that I don't think necessarily actor network theory does. And I also, as Rachel Bach knows, like to play with binaries, and urban-rural is perhaps the most critical to the way that Vietnam sees itself and the way that Vietnam sees its path forward. But beyond that, for people like us, there's a delicious geography to it. There's a delicious spatiality to it. The tension between rural and urban that I think is underplayed in current versions of urban assemblage. And I find that, in speaking theoretically, urban assemblage tends to focus on the city as a container of ideas and of people and institutions, and it may overstate that case a little bit. The practices that I'm going to focus on are leisure practices in Vietnam, leisure practices by residents there, Vietnamese, foreigners, and and tourists, but also food, again, with the three groups that I've mentioned, and a really critical dimension of the urban experience today in Ho Chi Minh City, spirituality, spiritual practices, and the institutions that are, and buildings, and the way that are built and grow out of a sort of new version of the city that people tell me, and which is described as and pitched as a rural type of ideology. The imaginations is crossed out because I presented that last week, and that's more last year, and that's more of the interview data that I've accumulated, so I won't have time for that today. And then last but not least, I'll try and conclude with talking a little bit about some of the bigger ideas that Tim and Kevin have introduced and many of you have spoken to the last couple of days. Here are my research questions. I'm looking up. I have a paper written here, and I'll look at it here later, but I'm going to read along with you. This question is really important as I think about what's urban aspiration, urban potentiality. The first question is this play between the actual, what actually goes on, and the possible. We talked about the different translations for aspiration in different languages in Southeast Asia. But the best approximation for in Vietnamese for aspiration is yak mơ, which means dream. And dream is the closest way that I could think about possible. And last year when I was presenting my research, people talked about the countryside as a dream, but a possibility away from what they're currently doing and their current condition in the city, but a possibility nonetheless. And the actual is what I'll focus on today. And that rural-urban tension played against the actual and the possible is important to me. The discursive forms of the countryside feeding new forms of urban development and becoming. We'll see a little bit of that, especially when it comes to housing development. But that was again last year. This one is really interesting to me in that the rural is a heuristic device, I think, that's used by people and groups in Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City, to frame goal setting. As in, the city is assembled around certain ideas of the rural, and the goals that are set are not necessarily city-specific, but perhaps rural-specific. And what I'm interested in case of Ho Chi Minh City is how the countryside serves as a spatial fix to tensions and anxieties in Ho Chi Minh City. So instead of having, it's a spatial metaphor, and it's a geographical metaphor that I find really important. When people are really at odds with the city, when people are really yearning for home, when people are just sick of the traffic and sick of not seeing their families, they tend to rely upon the city, the countryside, as a sort of spatial fix. So, my primary arguments are that the rural needs to become, or is an integral part of the urban experience in Ho Chi Minh City. Now, this flies in the face of the rural-urban binary, which states that it's an opposition, right? That the rural, you know, is used to define the urban, but that they're separate entities. I believe that the rural has enhanced Ho Chi Minh City's meaning as a city. And that plays into the third point here, which is that I feel that Ho Chi Minh City is not any less of a city if it relies upon the rural to define itself. And it's not deprived of its meaningfulness as a city, as a big city, if it includes elements of the countryside within it. And so I think there's a certain level of scalar relationality there that needs to be emphasized in this paper and that needs to be emphasized in Southeast Asian cities more generally. We commonly think that a city is a city for these certain reasons and characteristics that don't include countryside or rural experiences or institutions. And I'm not sure that that's the case. And I also feel like the countryside's role in urban development, not in rural development, but in urban development, needs to be enlivened and rethought. And many people, and there are certain institutions and complexes in Ho Chi Minh City that argue that the city can only be sustained as a city if the rural is implemented in it. Kyle McFarland's work's been really important to me in this paper and other things too, but I feel like potentiality and aspiration, those two terms are interchangeable in some ways, and I think in future work I really want to think about how potentiality and aspiration are play with each other. The reason I introduce potentiality and urban potentiality is that's the word that McFarland uses in his 2011 paper about the city as an assemblage. We're using aspiration and the capacity to aspire in our project. And I think one of the things that I'm drawn to in McFarland's conceptualization that I'm going to use for my aspiration papers and work with my colleagues is to think about potentiality not as this unbridled possibility to accomplish all sorts of goals, but to think of potentiality with reins on it, with as a sort of provisional, short-term, constrained by all sorts of things that people want to be constrained by, like kinship ties and specific spatial arrangements. But without leaving behind the idea that the dream, the dreaming aspect, right, the possible, the imaginative aspect is truly an important part of the urban and rural experience. Again, when I mention urban assemblage, you often think of urban assemblage, at least I do, as this really glossy, kind of sweet-looking theory of cities, in which interactivity is favored over renegade individuality, potentiality is favored over failure. For me, I think there needs to be a little bit less rosiness, and a lot of you have heard me say this before, to aspiration. Aspiration and potentiality do have limits. And I think there's a strong correlation. Tim's written about this with Al, and I don't know who else was on that paper, but when he talks about imagination, theory, and practice, and the intertwinement between those three. And I like to think about those things in sort of that regard too, where everyday practice speaks to and correlates with discourse, representation, symbolism. And in my opinion, I build theory and think about theory last, after I think about everyday practice, materiality, and discourse and representation working with each other. How many more minutes do I have?
6 minutes.
6 minutes? Thank you. Let's go through the three themes that I think really pronounce the rural in Ho Chi Minh City. And I'll stop and ask everybody, since we heard about Edinburgh, we heard about Beijing, how many people have been to Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City? Please raise your hand. Oh, God. It's a start. There's a new place in Ho Chi Minh City in Quan Hai, which is District 2, and it's called An Phu. It's one of the wealthier districts in Ho Chi Minh City, called Tao Dien Village. It was started by an entrepreneur in Ho Chi Minh City who runs two very popular restaurants, and he's created this multi-use area right on the Saigon River that is popular because it has a couple of restaurants, it has a boutique hotel. It is a calm in the middle of the firestorm, in the middle of the chaos that is Ho Chi Minh City. There is the map of Tao Dien, and you can see in green, it's at the top of District 2, and I'll use this green thing. This is District 1 right here, so it's only about 7 kilometers away, but it's a world away in terms of the environment. Sorry, the map's not better. I just used Google Maps this morning. All right. Here's a picture of Tau Dien, the entrance to Tau Dien. The events manager there, in an article I just recently read from We Magazine, which is a popular magazine in Ho Chi Minh City, he says, what sets us apart, our village resort, is that we're literally a 15-minute shuttle ride from the city center. It's the perfect location for those who've had enough of the city but still want the full range of services. What I found important about this quote is we often think about the blurred line between the city and the countryside and how those two places play off of and bleed into each other and the blurriness within them. Well, I didn't see that in this quote. I feel like with this quote, both the city and the countryside can coexist together, and that the city and countryside's features are reinforced in a place like this. Now, of course, it's expensive, and of course, it's not for everyone. But I think that this place is interesting is that you don't lose the city when you step into the countryside, but that you have both at your fingertips. I was there once and took a picture of my friend Sean, so you can see I'm doing my go-alongs, as they call it here at English Geography. There's no website for it, so I thought you'd find that interesting. Second is food. Now, food is a critical component to any city experience and urban experience, but many people want to experience different parts and different types of Vietnamese cuisine without leaving the city, and that's very possible. Not only that, they also want to experience the family and communal component to the countryside without leaving the city. This is a website for one of the most popular new restaurants in Vietnam, in Ho Chi Minh City, called Cup Gac, which means brick restaurant. And Khai Quan Khoi means a restaurant from home, the hometown, the Quê Hương, over in the countryside, a countryside restaurant that has all sorts of different varieties of food that you may or may not want to try. In one of their brochures, they claim that they are laying out a dining experience where sincere, peaceful, and quiet souvenirs can be created in a warm and cozy place, where the true values of a countryman are reigning under the motto of eat green, live healthy, where every action is designed to demonstrate respect to our environment. And the suggestion here is that the description of the restaurant has qualities that differ from the city, and that the city doesn't actually have core Vietnamese values, but that it does, and it lies within the city itself. And it's recently expanded. I was there a couple weeks ago. If you're a tourist, you can experience all sorts of different multi-sensual experiences in southern Vietnam, including a back of the motorbike tour. Those are probably the most popular new tourism niche in Vietnam. Many of you know I like to study tourism in Ho Chi Minh City, and this is one of the most popular companies who takes people on the back of a motorbike and takes them on cooking classes where they can prepare the food, cook the food, and eat the food, all under the guise of countrysideness in Ho Chi Minh City. Another stop on a back of the motorbike tour. I apologize for the quality of this picture. Blame the photographer, this big American bald guy who likes to eat the food rather than take pictures of it. Last but not least is spirituality. Spirituality is understood as a critical Vietnamese cultural value. The idea of Phong Thuy, which is a feng shui, yin yang, wind, water, is perhaps the backbone of what many people feel is the Vietnamese countryside. And instead of it being neglected once people become urbanized and become these God-hating liberals, instead the city has transformed under the weight of spirituality. You're seeing all sorts of new temples. You're seeing temples sprout out that we haven't seen before in a place like Ho Chi Minh City. This is the Tortoise Temple, which is more popular than ever. I'm not sure about Chinese culture, but in Vietnamese culture, the tortoise is a symbol of balancing feng shui, and it's a very positive energy force in Vietnamese spirituality. And so people come to this temple in order to buy tortoises, turtles, you see all those, and put them in the water And by doing this, they are creating conditions where they will have better, more forceful, positive energy. The turtle is also known in Vietnamese culture, spiritual culture, as being really tied closely to good job experiences and good professional and good job and a lot of wealth. And I think it's no coincidence that this temple has really grown in the last few years as a middle class has formed, as people from the countryside have moved to the city in droves, living there and experiencing all the tensions that the city has to offer, and use this place as a way to link back and remember Nhung Nha home, but also to bring the values that they have from the countryside into the city, transforming the city into a place that they feel more comfortable in. That's a lot of turtles. Eric Harms, anthropologist at Yale, writes a lot about neo-geomancy. What he talks about, and I had to borrow this from Eric, is a new take on urban development. And this plays a lot into what Tim's writing about tall buildings. I'll finish in a second. But also plays into some of the urban redevelopment schemes that Kevin was talking about a few hours ago now. We think of urban redevelopment, we think of the transformation of the waterfront, we think of mixed use, we think of new baseball stadiums. What we don't think about in urban redevelopment, at least not overtly, which is occurring in a place like Ho Chi Minh City, is that people are building taller buildings, family homes, to reach the heavens, to propitiate an ancestor worship, and to propitiate the spirits. In other words, they have wealth that never existed before in the countryside. Their parents and their relatives were never able to have the kinds of material wealth that they have now. And in places like Ho Chi Minh City and Hanoi, people are justifying more floors built on their apartments and on their homes as a way to reach the heavens and reach their elders in a more close and intimate manner. Some broader themes. I'll finish up in the next 90 seconds. The city is a place of potentiality and aspiration. That's been certainly a major theme of the last 2 days. We haven't really talked a lot about materiality versus discourse, symbolism versus practice, and how those two play into each other. And I think it's something that I'm going to work on in the next few years with this project in Ho Chi Minh. In Vietnamese studies, there is this tendency to think of rural to urban migration as a way for people to become more mobile once they reach the city. Riggy, our guy from Durham, he's written some stuff about this. Instead, I want to rethink the idea of push and pull, and the pull from the rural into the urban, and instead rethink the ways and think about the ways in which people are being pulled from the urban to the rural, and how that affects things like urban citizenship. And I also, like Eric, feel that there's a level of scalar relationality that privileges the city over the countryside, and I'm not sure that that's the way in which urban residents in Ho Chi Minh look at it. And last but not least, the final point I want to make is when you think about worlding cities, Ananya Roy, Iwa Ong, a lot of work's been done by people in this room about this kind of thing. There's a tendency, even amongst new ways of thinking about theorizing from the global south, which the cities are networked in new ways under new auspices, but they still sort of speak to the, in my opinion, stale arguments that Saskia Sassen and other people think about city networks and urban networks and globalization as a bigger picture, and cities speak to processes of globalization that exist around the world. I would like to see cities not only speaking on their own behalves and in their own sort of unique ways, but also speaking to rural instead of neglecting the rural and moving sort of outward in a scalar and a geographical sense. Thanks for sticking with me. And,